Welcome, Hollywood.
Hey, here we are.
I have prepared. I have brought with me specialized tooling from an advanced century. And if I am successful, I will tell you in timeless terms what modern technology might do for your business. In order to get started, I first have to recognize I'm in Hollywood. So obviously, I've brought with me completely modern technology, the groundbreaking technology, trying to upend the nature of how intelligence works these days. I will tell, seeing as I'm in Hollywood, I had to start with movie reference, right? So I'm coming in. Oh, sorry. There's a lesson to this. Now you've seen the entire slides. Oh my gosh. Oh no. Look, close your eyes. Quit looking. Okay, there we go. All that for a pun. Okay, here's the lesson that I brought. Okay, I'm gonna have to pull the script. So, tools are just a means to an end. And you can have a useful tool, or you can have the right tool. And one of them works a lot better. I might be solo in my belief, but I'm going to make a team of heroes by the end of this conversation. And I do hope it's a conversation, because I'm going to lead you down a path of alternate thought, from here to the future. This talk is not really for 2018. This is a talk for the year 2020 and beyond. We are going to examine what it really means to have an AI-first future, examining how human error factors into the next leap with artificial intelligence, and how there's two tools available right now from, oh, might I say, I am biased company LiveTiles, that's going to usher in a brand new era. So for the last 10 years, we've all heard some variation of this term, digital transformation. Moving from, as we heard about this morning, moving from paper processes to paperless processes, harnessing the digital computers and technologies that are now fit in our pockets. It started, in fact, in the 1950s, and is older than artificial intelligence itself as a field. Can anybody tell me how old artificial intelligence as a field is? Anyone? 62 years. My father is older in the field of artificial intelligence. Is anyone, is anyone in this room older than the field of artificial intelligence? Anyway, yeah. I have been alive the majority of the time that artificial intelligence has been a discipline. And right now, we're all walking around like there's a bullseye on our back. So 47% of jobs in the US are at risk of automation in the next 20 years, according to S&P Global. There was a time where 97% of all jobs were under threat from automation. And by the end of this talk, I will reveal what happened after that time and what kind of tools they ended up using in order to survive. Last week was when I heard I was going to be speaking at this conference, and last week also happens to be when Microsoft Build happened. Microsoft, the largest software company in the world, premiered its new suite of artificial intelligence tools. And when they said, please come talk in Hollywood, I'm like, oh, fantastic. This is absolutely fantastic. I'm going to talk about how they premiered the AI-first future, guys. And I can really delve deep into different strategies for utilizing artificial intelligence. And I was thinking, you know, random tree algorithms in order to discover personalization of media and content and all these things that were hinted upon on stage. And then they said, it's not a technical audience. Okay, why did you invite the chief architect if it's not a technical audience? Thank you. It was because the crux of it, the AI-first future part of it, there's a specific view at LiveTiles that we need to reiterate and that we need to echo. This is actually, as is often the case in Hollywood, a sequel to a talk that was given at the last Hits in the fall. Did anybody attend the previous LiveTiles talk at the Hits in the fall? This one in the back. We were talking about, if you appear to, you know what the real AI-first future is. AI-first future is actually an ethics-first future. That is the concept that is going to preserve humanity and make it so our machines turn out to be Captain America and not Deadpool. Okay? Everyone is worried about intelligent machines trapping us in some way, enslaving us, as was mentioned this morning. And truly, they are like Deadpool. They are likable but psychopathic. They have no morals. They have no ethics. They only have what we give them. Our minds had millions of years to evolve in order to respect constructing groups. And even though they are imperfect, they are the best creation thus far on this earth for creating an ethical outcome in the world. So when you hear buzz terms, like you hear the three pillars that Microsoft introduced last week, the three pillars of artificial intelligence as they're pursuing it, machine learning, artificial vision, and artificial language, you need to stop for a moment and ask yourself, your scientists were so preoccupied with other, not the, they could, they didn't think to think if they should. Right? Looking at this from an ethics lens, you realize that there's huge problems. So let's talk about some of those problems. The first step, even looking at something harmless, something apparently harmless, like the analysis of vision. So this is our new state-of-the-art API for analyzing vision. It takes something like this bird, breaks it down into pixels. This is just visualizing how the neural network sees. And they had some research examples. Okay? A good, for instance, would be an easy thing is telling an apple from an orange. That is a simple vision problem. Very well solved. You can deploy a solution for that out on the cloud. But then it's when you start getting more finer grained where humans still have the advantage. For instance, how might you go about classifying a dog from a wolf? And there's real Microsoft researchers that came up and presented about how they were attempting to teach the machine how to classify a dog from a wolf. And if you were perhaps harnessing Bing Search's existing imagery, you'd be able to look at deeper, you'd be able to isolate deeper features. Instead of just looking at the entire view of the dog, you could do something like compare the eyes, analyzing it down, and they're able to show the deep neural network in layers builds from small features to big features. And they said it could do things like analyze the eyes. It could do things like analyze the ears. It could do things like analyze the mouth. But here's the first problem with machine learning. The data that you hand it is the data that it trains on. So you know what researchers were actually training dog versus wolf? Snow in the background. It actually turns out that once they exposed, made a transparent version of the algorithm that actually highlighted which pixels were which on the image, it was actually, in the training data, a flaw where the snow was the overriding feature, not what the dog looked like at all. And there's harder problems than this. So if the data were perfect, even if the data were perfect, there's this problem that we have creating an ethical future because we didn't have an ethical past. So Jill this morning was talking about hiring people for roles. The most common way of hiring people is starting with resumes and screening them. The average organization will spend hundreds of thousands of man hours trying to sort through just the resumes just to get down to the interview. Obviously, there's machine learning possibility in this, and obviously the translation, for instance, the translation of the text into or the scanning of a paper piece into machine learning. That is a very easy vision problem. But there was a company that wanted to go one step further, and they wanted to actually screen from resume to interview. So they started trying to analyze how might you weigh the resume? Any volunteers? How do you go about weighing the resume of people who apply for your positions at your company? What's the first topic area that you look at? What's the most important topic area that you look at?
Work history.
Very good. So you might do something like highlight the work experience, see if that's applicable. Maybe after that you might look for the education to see if it links up in some meaningful way. Then you might look at various other highlights in order to understand
how does that track back to the semantic, important work that's going to happen in this position? Unfortunately, when the machine zoomed in, what did they feed the machine in order to arrive at this algorithm? They fed it the previous history of human HR people looking at resumes, filtering them, and assigning out interviews. And once they did that, I will tell you that on the screen right here is the overriding factor that drove 90%, correlated 90% of both of the interviews. It was actually the zip code. The zip code of the employee, because of the social strata the potential employee fell into, determined whether or not they got the interview. And it turns out, you can't have an ethical future if you don't have an ethical past. So how are we going to, so this falls into the biggest challenge that we have in building our tools. Can we have ethical tools if we don't have ethical humans? Okay? So, would everybody agree? Let me tell you a personal story really fast. Does everybody know what they wouldn't be doing if they didn't work in technology? This is an important piece of your history as well. To tell a personal story, my father is from rural Ohio, a place where they have two things. Well, they have three things. They have farms, they have mines, and they have Amish. So I could have been a farmer, I could have been a miner, or I could have been Amish. In any case, I'd spend a lot more time with shovels and a lot less time with the Visual Studio and trying to churn out artificial intelligence solutions with my team. But thanks to the progress of technology, I am now doing this job, trying to explain ethical shovels to a room full of people in Hollywood. The human error is where human ethics comes from. And I'm going to try to figure out right now, how much human error and how much human ethics do we have in this room? Because heaven and hell is the place that we will find ourselves in the near future, because we will either trap ourselves with flawed data or trap ourselves with flawed history. So, hence the title of the presentation, Heaven and Hell. So, first off, I will say, Heaven and Hell, the greatest album by Black Sabbath. Yes. The first one with Ronnie James Dio. Oh man, so good. Unfortunately, they said I couldn't just do a 5-minute rendition of it, karaoke style, but if we're in the after party. So here's the story. And if you have heard this before, it is sometimes called the parable of the long spoons. If you've heard this before, don't raise your hand when I ask for volunteers. Are you ready? Heaven and hell are the same place. It is starving people around a table. On this table, there's the most beautiful, most delicious food you've ever tasted. Or just M&M's, one or the other. The people sitting around the table have long spoons with which they must reach. This works a lot better if I had a banquet table like we have out for lunch, but this small table is all I could get a hold of. And in heaven, everyone is full. In hell, everyone is starving. So who would like to step up and solve this ethical conundrum with me right now? Anyone? I'm gonna point. Okay, you sir, would you like to join me? Yep, sure. All right. And then you ma'am. You seem ethical. No, this ma'am right here. Yes, you have now volunteered my voicing, yes. So I promised heaven and hell with two tools to let us know how to go. So I'm going to constrict you. So without taking your hand off the end of the shovel. So, this is a test of flexibility. Without taking your hand off the end of the shovel, are you going to make it to heaven or are you going to make it to hell? How can you make sure everyone is fed? Any input from the audience?
You feed each other.
You guys
do. Ah! He said it. You're about to try it? The answer is you feed each other. Oh man, this is not the creative problem solving. I was hoping. So here, man. Let me try to demonstrate. Here, hold this. Alright. So obviously, once I get a load payload, I cannot make it. I could try.
Oh.
I got one.
Nice.
Or I could very simply feed my fellow. In heaven, everyone is full. And why? Because we feed each other. So please sit down. Now we all know. Okay. So at LifeTiles, this really boils down to two dimensions. First off, we support self-service, not self-serving. And in our core products, we support enabling people to feed each other with their digital tools. So who here comes from an IT organization where IT is trying to single-handedly feed everyone what they need? Raise your hand. Just raise your hand if you feel like IT is trying to feed everyone, they're starving for our tools, but we only have so much to go around. And the challenge with that is it's not just the capabilities anymore, because digital literacy is getting so high. It's the time, and it's the administrative power. Okay? If you give it out, people can break things. People can get in their own way. So at LifeTiles, we believe it has to be about self-service and not self-serving. In addition to that, an AI-first future needs to be an ethics-first future. If you want to get deeper into the topics of where Microsoft is really heading, particularly with their ethical outlook on artificial intelligence, you should read Hit Refresh by Satya Nadella. In it, he outlines not just the role of technology, but the role of humanity. And it's some of the words that we heard this morning talking about his three pillars of empathy, creativity, and accountability. These are the only three things humans will do after artificial intelligence is fully online, fully adopted, and available everywhere in the next decade. What that means for media and entertainment, we already heard a little bit this morning. Deeper personalization, massive scale analysis of sentiment of audience, picking apart stories in order to understand emotional content, simulating an emotional reaction to a story before it's a movie, simulating emotional reaction to a movie before it's released. And with these three roles for humanity, and this obvious dangers that we pointed out for artificial intelligence, LifeTiles supports three pillars of ethical AI. The sort of trilogy, if you will, of everything that you need to get the heroes that we need rather than the heroes that we deserve. The first one is transparent data. When you are analyzing the data set, or after you are done analyzing the data set and it starts functioning, you should be specifically requesting for your project not just the resulting model, it's not just the brain, but the actual experience that trained the brain. So the underlying data set. When we hearken back to the wolf example, if you had looked at the underlying data set of the wolves, you would know that they were all covered in snow, and you would transparently be able to see, it's obviously challenges with the data set. The next example you'd want is auditable algorithms. The example that we saw with the resumes. You want something that will actually return its weighting and its values. The thing about neural networks is you can't actually debug them. You can't actually pick them apart.
but there's a handful of algorithms that can be picked apart. There's a difference between an algorithm that is called a decision tree that is able to expose its inner workings to the outside world with a command, and a deep neural network where it is completely mysterious where the learning actually centralizes within the network. When you are running your projects, you need to ask, is this algorithm auditable? And if the answer is no, you're immediately doing something that could be unethical. The last one would be the stakes of decisions for the artificial intelligence. And the number one would be aggregating information creates bias, but does not necessarily cause decisions. Your bias creation, such as what, like we were talking about, aggregating books in order to see if you can turn them into movies, that is actual bias decision making. It works very well with fits very well into the milieu of machine learning, but it is not necessarily ethical. And what you need to have is reversible decisions that are going to AI. So that way, when humans apply the accountability, they are able to come back, second guess it. They are able to recover the resume from the stack if it was judged unfairly. It needs to be a reversible decision and not one that the machine commits by itself. So finally, when we say 47% of jobs in the US are at risk of automation in the next 20 years, I want you to think of a shovel. I want you to realize that this is antiquated technology that we still sell today and we still use today, but most jobs that require a shovel are like the ones that I could have had. I could have been a farmer, I could have been a miner. Okay? But what in particular, 97% of all people at one point were under threat of losing their job to automation. Can anybody tell me what the amazing groundbreaking technology was that destroyed 97% of all jobs, leading us to the world we have today? It was not artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence hopes to have this kind of impact, but statistically cannot.
Steam engine?
So I was going to say specifically the tractor. 97% of all people used to be farmers. If you're trying to scare me by saying 47% of all jobs will no longer be here, I am not scared, because I have in my lifetime never known 97% of all jobs that were there. So, do not despair. Do not let the fear of the unknown blind you to the hope of the possibilities, and maintain an ethical outlook when you are approaching artificial intelligence. So finally, I'm going to end with a quote from Dr. Paul Sheard, the vice chairman at S&P Global, the same research company that gave us our 47% bullseye on our back. Half of all people in this room should really listen to this. If the robots are indeed coming and doing so in full force, we should recognize that in principle, this is a good thing, but start paying much more attention to the challenges this will pose for societal institutions and the social contract. Where do the jobs go? Where do the next wave of jobs come from after you've replaced current work with the productivity of artificial intelligence? If you would like to know more, I would love for you to please go download our white paper on the economic impact of AI from livetiles.nyc/white-paper-the-economic-impact-of-AI. Everybody just take a picture of that. Basically, please just take a picture of that. If you would like to know more about LiveTiles itself, I would encourage you to please come by our booth in the networking area, where we can show you a demo of our artificial intelligence-powered bot product, a platform for making intelligent agents for your organization, connecting your work processes to the pockets of particularly all of those freelancers who can definitely get text messages but cannot log into your IT systems. We have a bot product for you. I believe we're right at time for lunch. Do you have any questions from the audience? Yes, you can have some M&Ms. Ma'am, did you have a question? Okay. Thank you very much, and I hope to see you in the networking area, and have a good lunch. Thank you.